Well, that was quite a thing. I guess we all are now fresh off of having watched the Republican debate, taping it right after. You guys, do you have thoughts in your head as to what happened, what transpired?
Wait. I thought this was the Ahsoka review. Kalen, are we not talking about Ahsoka?
Yeah, you could have told me.
I don't even know what that is.
You could have told me any Star Wars character was Doug Burgum tonight, and I would have believed you.
Okay, that's a good one. That's an excellent, that's a good one. And that is a great way to start, because this is the Line Drive Podcast. I love a good Star Wars joke right off the bat. That's really good. Kalen Dorr with the early first points. So you guys having watched, and then of course there was counter programming by the former president Donald Trump with a sit down interview with Tucker Carlson that is fast approaching 100 million views on Twitter, running as counter programming. But on the debate, I have a couple of clips pulled, including one and also one from President Trump. But let's just initial thoughts from having watched the 2-hour debate. Hogan, what's your takeaway?
Yeah, I thought they did not spend enough time attacking Joe Biden directly. I thought they, went after each other. And look, you're trying to climb the ladder to get to Donald Trump, who's 50 points ahead. So it's got a ladder with 50 rungs. So you got to knock off a couple, to your right and to your left on that debate stage to get up that ladder. So I understand why they attack each other. That's part of the deal. But they didn't spend enough time on Joe Biden, I don't think. A lot of attention paid to Vivek Ramaswamy tonight, which tells me internal polling for these candidates and campaigns shows that bump is real, that people are taking a look at Vivek and they want to try and stop him before he ascended too much higher. And anytime you start to rise in the polls, it's the your turkey with his head raised is the one that gets shot. And so it makes sense that they would go after him. I thought Vivek had as many good moments as he had bad moments. The Nikki exchange was a bad moment for him, I thought, with the foreign policy stuff that Nikki brought. Christie did what he was going to do, which was basically just, mess with Trump and do his deal where he takes on the crowd. He got booed so loudly at some point. I love the fact that Brett Baer had to look at the crowd and be like, "Hey, let's just get through this, guys." It was a funny little dress. I thought that Pence came out firing a little bit. He wanted to show he was aggressive, because the knock on him is he's just kind of so straight laced that he's not a fighter that the GOP is really looking for right now. So I think he tried to prove some of that. I thought DeSantis did fine. He had some whiffs, I think, some lines that were obviously canned that had been rehearsed and practiced a bunch of times. The crowd seemed stacked with a few of his folks. But, for the most part, it was a good contrast of where we are as a party versus where the left is and where Joe Biden is. I think the highlight of my night didn't even come from the debate. It was actually on Twitter when the abortion thing was going on, and Jen Psaki tweets out, "No one supports abortion up until the moment of birth." And I was like, wait, what? Every single Democrat in the U.S. Senate but one just voted for a bill that would allow abortion any place, any time, for any reason up until the moment of birth. They wanted you to pay for it. And that's literally Joe Biden's position. I saw her just getting drugged on Twitter being like, when should we not allow it? But you tell us then when your cutoff is for abortion. I mean, that was kind of funny to me. But overall, I thought it was substantive. I thought they had some good points in there. A lot of shouting happened. I'm kind of ready for it to be a smaller stage. But it was, as you say, Tim, when you're not on a campaign, debate nights are fun. You just sit
back
and put it all in. When you're on a campaign, it's like you got a rapid response, everything. So I thought it was fine.
Yeah, I almost tweeted earlier today, to all my friends and colleagues who are working tonight because it's debate night. Sucks for you, Hogan, or I'm sorry, Kalen. What your thoughts, initial takeaways? And we'll get through into some detail into some of the stuff Hogan just mentioned.
Yeah, what I'd like to do is, I'm not going to go into it, but at the end, Tim, if we could kind of go through every candidate and talk about who we think maybe drops out after this.
Okay, sure.
If you take a look at really what we're looking at is a lot of these guys promised to make it to the first debate, and people have been investing their time and their money in these folks. And, you know, I would say, quite frankly, a lot of them didn't live up to the price of entry. Guys like Burgum, guys like Ada Hutchinson.
What are you talking about? He killed
guys like I don't even know who they are. Guys like even Tim Scott, man. I had written down what happened to Tim Scott.
Yeah, I thought he really disappeared.
Yeah, really skilled, you know, orator, really skilled policy guy who, you know, I think this is the first time I've ever seen him do something like this. Really didn't do a great job. You know, I think Ron kind of wildly underperformed, and he's clearly grappling with an identity crisis. You know, he hasn't figured out how to handle any of the Trump questions yet. He didn't raise his hand immediately when asked about it. And I've got, and just so you know, I've got pulled up side by side. Ron is on Hannity currently, and Hannity is putting the screws to him on, you know, why he didn't defend Trump. And he didn't yet, I'm reading it, he's not having good answers. So, you know, these guys, a lot of them are clearly going through some identity crises. Pence, you know, is a little out of character. I mean, good for him. Chris Christie was reaching for his emotional support hoagie far more times than not.
That's the best tweet I saw all night.
But I think ultimately, guys,
I didn't see that.
And you correct me if you think I'm wrong or I'm off base, and this isn't an inflammatory take. But ultimately, none of this matters because no one's going to see a bump. Trump's going to go to jail tomorrow, and we're not going to talk about this.
We're not going to talk about it. Wipe it off.
Yep. I mean, this
kind of doesn't matter.
You're right. By the end of Thursday, this debate will, for all intents and purposes, not have happened. Speaking of Trump, and you know, we did the, as we mentioned off the top. First of all, like and subscribe the Line Drive podcast while you're listening, and hear more scintillating commentary like Kalen just gave us. he did counter-pro, and Hogan too. I'm sorry, but he was the last one to talk. Hogan, that's all. That's all it was. Yeah. You can't, if you're listening on the audio version, you can't see Hogan rolling his eyes.
You know, just real quick though, Kalen brought up something too about the underperforming of DeSantis. I think one of his worst moments, he didn't say a word. And it was, I asked the hand raise question about, I don't remember what the question was.
Would you pardon Trump?
And Vivek shot, everyone shot, yeah, everyone. He visibly just looked around and it was like, it was weird.
Waiting to see what I think looked like.
Waiting to see what everybody else said. Vivek did one of these a couple of times while DeSantis was talking. He was like, put his finger in the air, like kept licking it.
What he was trying to do. Yeah. I mean, Vivek was the center of attention for a lot of things, for good or for bad. I thought I saw some people on Twitter reacting poorly to it, but I thought that Bret Baier's pivot when they went to break, and by the way, it was almost an hour, like 51 minutes into the event is the first time Donald Trump's name got mentioned, which is really saying so. It's saying something, I think, and it didn't take that long because he wasn't hanging over this debate like a big, you know, front runner shadow. It's like, it was purposeful. Like, we're not going to mention the guy for the first period of time. And then when they first do mention him, they cut to a live shot. They've got a camera outside the jail in Fulton County. Give him credit for production value, I guess, but geez, a camera outside the jail. Meanwhile, they don't mention that he's all doing an interview with Tucker at that very moment. They'll show the jail, but they won't mention the guy that they fired not very long ago. So he did the counter programming, sat down with Tucker Carlson, and here's one clip from that. And the question was, right off the bat, how come you're not at the debate?
Why aren't you at the Fox News debate tonight in Milwaukee?
Well, you know, a lot of people have been asking me that, and many people said you shouldn't do them, but you see the polls have come out, and I'm leading by 50 and 60 points. And, you know, some of them are at 1 and 0 and 2. And I'm saying, do I sit there for an hour or 2 hours, whatever it's going to be, and get harassed by people that shouldn't even be running for president? Should I be doing that? And a network that isn't particularly friendly to me, frankly. You know, they were backing Ron DeSanctimonious like crazy, and now they've given up on him. I mean, it's a lost cause.
Hogan likes that one. So what do you think on having seen the debate now and the reaction that's starting to roll in? Trump skipped it. Good move, yay or nay?
Yeah, Hogan. Look, I would be, if I were advising Trump, and I'm not, I would be derelict in my duty to tell him to, if I told him to go to that debate. He's right. He's up 40, 50 points in some of these polls. Don't be a punching bag or a pinata for everyone else. At the same time, selfishly, I would have loved to have seen him on that debate stage because, you know, I mean, you want to have like a marquee, amazing event, but your marquee candidate isn't there. It kind of, you know, dims the luster a little bit. And it showed. I mean, it was obvious that those people up there are making promises and saying, I will do these things. And they very well may, should they ever be elected president. But you have someone in Donald Trump who did them. So he can say, in a time of crisis, when we're facing all the problems with crime and border and energy and wars and all the stuff we're facing with the economy, would you really want to risk this on a promise? My performance speaks for itself. We did these things, and now I'm a cherry on top is I'm going to destroy the deep state in addition to these things. I mean, he's got a good story to tell, and he did a good job, smart, going over to Tucker. And then, as Kaylin pointed out, he goes tomorrow to jail, and he wipes all this debate coverage off. They'll do another, you know, OJ-style following of him leaving Jersey and heading to Georgia. I mean, you know, I thought honestly, and I don't mean to be trite or a homer here, but I think he kind of won the night.
Do you think that Trump was right not to go? And do you think that he comes out on top in this equation, Kaylin?
Yeah. I mean, I keep thinking about, you know, a lot of the guys in the room tonight probably wouldn't have had, I'm just going to say it, very point blank. Yeah. I don't think they would have had the balls to say half the stuff they said tonight had Trump been there. I think it would have been a really interesting thought exercise, right? To see who's kind of got it and who doesn't. But no, I mean, it makes no sense for him to show up. This is not even this wasn't even a VP debate. This was like debate to be, I don't know, secretary of the human resources of the administration.
Yeah.
I
would like to point out that Kaylin's job when he was in the administration was he worked for cabinet communications. And so he ought to know.
He ought to have a cabinet official or
totally blank
off the top.
Just completely blank.
It's like your Rick Perry moment.
I just didn't want to insult any actual like human beings holding those offices in the past. I'm not kidding, guys. Like I'm kind of embarrassed by what we just watched. I mean, that was not.
Well, I'm not going to go that far. I thought it had its good moments. It was entertaining. Some of the back and forth,
yeah,
and some
but like
of
it
the fireworks
be.
Were entertaining. But as far as the Trump question goes, he had no business being involved in that thing. I mean, he's got a gigantic lead all over the place. He's leading substantially in the early states where it really matters. And you know, you talked about who's going to be on, who from that stage tonight is no longer going to be there and who's going to drop out soon enough. I mean, you know, substantial number of people from the field are not going to make it to, say, South Carolina. You know, their campaigns will end, you know, by
some
the first.
Will make it to Iowa.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, let's not forget that, you know, the current vice president, of course, dropped out before the Iowa caucuses even occurred. But there only for Trump, only bad, only, huh?
Is that Obama?
No, not Obama.
He's gone, I'm sorry.
No, yeah. Only if Trump had shown up, only bad things could have happened for him. He's got this gigantic lead.
Yeah.
No one is going to break him out of this pack. And, you know, and for all the stuff, let's get into some of these clips here. And I'm trying to, Fox put out a very stern warning about using too much of their video. They said they capped it at 3 minutes from the debate total. So
weird.
I added up the length of the four sound bites that I picked, and it came to 2 minutes and like 55 seconds.
Hey, so, don't worry, Tim. They took a lot of money from TikTok tonight. And among others, several other just absolutely absurd advertisers.
I saw a Christine Gnome ad in there, which was interestingly placed. Did you guys know that?
The whole thing's so offensive.
All right. So I thought that we're going to give DeSantis a chance to give one of his stronger answers. I thought DeSantis ran kind of hot and cold. I thought he had a really, really good start for him. And that he got the first question, he launched right into his answer. There was no hesitation, no delay. He didn't say like, you know, thank you for, you know, thanks for putting on the debate. Thanks for hosting it. Good to see you, Martha. Or he didn't say anything like that. Right. He just launched right into it. So, and here it is. I thought it was a good, strong start. Maybe you guys see differently.
Our country is in decline. This decline is not inevitable. It's a choice. We need to send Joe Biden back to his basement and reverse American decline. And it starts with understanding we must reverse Bidenomics so that middle-class families have a chance to succeed again. We cannot succeed as a country if you are working hard and you can't afford groceries, a car, or a new home while Hunter Biden can make hundreds of thousands of dollars on lousy paintings. That is wrong. We also cannot succeed when the Congress spends trillions and trillions of dollars. Those rich men north of Richmond have put us in this situation. And finally, we need to lower your gas prices. We're going to open up all energy production. We will be energy dominant again in this country. I showed it could be done in the state of Florida. I pledge to you as your president, we will get the job done and I will not let you down.
So that, to me, that was a pretty complete answer. He had talked about how we got to reverse the trend that's going on, reverse the decline of this country, because that goes to the right track, wrong track view of people. And most Americans think that the country's on the wrong track. No question of that. He attacked Biden, showing that Biden is the real opponent. He worked in Hunter, even got a pop culture reference in there, talking about the rich men north of Richmond with the what's the guy's name? Oliver Anthony with that number one country song now. And then he took on the economy and fuel and opening up our own natural resource. Pretty solid answer. I thought it was a great way to start. Later on, like in the middle part of the debate, he vanished and was somewhere over in Tim Scott land, not using his microphone. But I thought it was a great start.
Yeah, his mannerisms there were kind of weird. It was almost like he forgot he was supposed to be smiling until afterwards. And then he kind of cracked like a shit-eating grin out of nowhere. Like, I don't disagree. I thought that was probably his most, you know, the most holistically okay and well-researched and poll and group-driven answer he gave, which is great. He is like the pocket protector candidate, out of all of them. It's just kind of, I don't know. You got to keep it up, man. You can't like come out hot and then go away.
I didn't like it.
No?
No, I didn't. And I'll tell you why. I felt one of my friends, Stephen Miller, has a wonderful ability to start here and finish here. He works his own self into a frenzy.
I've seen it in action.
Yeah, DeSantis started here. I thought it was odd. And by the way, reverse the decline, reverse the Bidenomics, Congress spends too much, energy independent. Okay, like everyone's for that same thing. What can you do to make it happen? What differentiates you? There's no softness. There was no, and by the way, we're in tough times. We don't necessarily need softness, but there's no relatability. There was no charisma to the answer.
Oh, okay. He did it in Florida, he says.
Yeah, like we did it in Florida. Like it was there was no, I'm trying to think of the way to describe it. It didn't flow. It was like, not even talking point. I don't want to say that, but it was just like, check this box, check this box. Here's a box I forgot to check. Oh, check. And Florida, oh, forget, and smile. And then
and scene. Like, right. I get what you're saying. And with the energy level, if your energy, I'll say that last part again. I'm sorry.
I didn't find it to be real. I wanted something more, you know, there was no people. He got to it eventually, but it was like the people in this country, it started off with like this suffering. You're paying more for gas. And this is on purpose, folks. This isn't, it wasn't like a plea. It was like an anger and a this and a that. But he was angry at the wrong moment. Does that make any sense?
It does. But you're a lot of it, what you're talking about is delivery focused, and where he's at the same energy level consistently all throughout. And that's not really effective.
It's style, but the substance again, it's just a box. We got to reverse the decline.
But doesn't this speak? Yeah, it's, but doesn't this speak?
He is like a political consultant. He's a Manchurian candidate. That's the last thing someone filled his brain with before he walked on stage.
He had better answers. There were a couple times he had problems where he dodged the question of did Mike Pence do the right thing on January 6th? He refused to answer what he would do federally, nationally on abortion in light of, you know, the 6-week abortion ban. So he was really sketchy on those. But you're right. Like later on, put a face on it. Talk about the American people. Later on, and his fentanyl question, talking about the border, he talked about a woman whose child had died from taking one Percocet. Yep. And I thought that was a much, much better effective answer for him. But what you're describing, the substance of it, is the problem that the whole field faces, right? Because most of them, or at least the ones who have a chance, most of them agree on basically all important, the major policy arguments. And they are also things that President Trump agrees with and actually accomplish things while president on those very things. So that presents a real problem. Like, how do you differentiate yourself from anyone on the field, and specifically Trump?
You can't win a nomination on a debate stage, but you can lose it. Okay. God love Rick Perry, but you can oops yourself off that stage in a hurry.
Right.
There were some moments I felt that the juxtaposition of the ones you just outlined with DeSantis and the other candidates were problematic. Meaning, how do you feel Mike Pence performed on January 6th? Now, brilliantly, I thought Mike Pence did a good job there going, I'm going to make everybody up here either say I did right or I did wrong, and that's the consequence. I thought that was smart on his part. But when they went to Tim Scott, he said, absolutely, Mike Pence did the right thing. They went to another person. Absolutely. Yes, he did the right thing. He stood for the Constitution. And then they get to DeSantis, and he's like, eh.
Well, DeSantis kept trying to make a different point that was
I know that, point. But my point is the juxtaposition of the ones who answered clearly on the abortion issue coupled with DeSantis's mealy-mouthedness, It wasn't as strong as he's touted to be.
I got one point here that I think speaks to what Hogan's talking about. So this is where the extended pregame for Ron has really come to bite him in the ass, right? And this is why Vivek is doing so well. It's because we were led to believe that Ron was going to be the candidate with the attitude, demeanor, decisiveness that you're seeing out of Vivek. That's why they're all going after him. So we were all led to believe for a very long time in this incubation period that Ron was going to come out here, put his foot down on some stuff. He wasn't poll tested. He was doing it all from his gut, yada, 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 right? And he showed up and he did exactly what Hogan's talking about today. That's why if you check Twitter, if you check you know, your text messages, whatever, a lot of people are inspired and encouraged by what Vivek, his spirit, well, he had a couple of bad answers, right?
Yeah.
Like he didn't bat 100. He did bat 1,000, but the spirit of his answers, the conviction with which he spoke, those are the things. He did the best job channeling Trump up there.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we've expected from Ron. And that's why that opening statement and some of his others fall so incredibly flat. We were led to believe up here, right? This is like you go, you see the trailer for Wakanda Forever, one of Hogan's favorite movies. And when you show up and you see it, it is wildly disappointing. Ron DeSantis is Wakanda Forever in the sense.
Wow. So then if you look at it this way, if you look at sort of his trend line in this debate, it kind of mirrors his entire campaign, really, because I think he came out strong. I think Hogan disagrees, but I think his first answer was pretty good. Then he went the middle part of the debate and he disappeared. So that is kind of like, you know, the idea of Ron DeSantis as a candidate was something that appealed to a lot of people. And then for like 3 or 4 months, he disappeared. And there was that period where he refused to answer whether or not he was actually going to run for president at all. And then in this debate, he had a couple of really bad answers, like we just discussed, where he refused to answer the question. And that's where those are the stumbles that he's had along the way. So to me, it's a pretty parallel. His performance in this debate and the trend line in this one event is a lot like the trend line of his entire candidacy, starting high, kind of a stall, and then some bad mistakes.
It was an opportunity for him to. Well, look, debates are about creating opportunities. Don't get me wrong, for everybody. And I think some had some good moments. The question is, can you turn that into momentum? And then you can you turn the momentum into a movement? And right now, DeSantis, his answer was fine from a substantive standpoint. Sure, we want to reverse the decline. Sure, we want to reverse Bidenomics. Sure, Congress spends too much. Yeah, let's be energy independent, which we weren't ever for 30 years till Donald Trump came along. But okay, that's the I liken it. I used to do this. It's like the wheel of my little wheel of fortune theory. You remember at the end of the last puzzle, it's they give you RSTLNE because everyone over the years realized the letters most likely to help solve the puzzle were RSTLNE. So Wheel of Fortune picks puzzles and gives you RSTLNE, and then they say pick three more now, because they've made the puzzles harder and you need to figure out those other three letters. It's like everyone's got the lower taxes, a Second Amendment, reverse Bidenomics, Biden's bad. What are the three other letters that are going to set you apart to make you unique? And I just didn't feel like it was, I don't think he did it. Again, let me put it like this. I don't think where we are now, polling wise or anything else, changes at all after this.
No, I'm sure it probably doesn't. And you can tell, I want to get to these other three clips. Yeah. It's funny, all the three remaining clips that I have in the 3 minutes of clips that we were allotted by Fox News, or everybody was, all of them feature Vivek Ramaswamy, because to me, he was the story of the debate. I mean, we're talking about how did Ron do, how did Pence do, and all that stuff. But Vivek Ramaswamy was no question. He had the most energy. I think if you see somebody's going to do a breakdown of talking time, in the debate, and I bet you he leads that.
Yeah.
We saw more internet search traffic during the debate.
Yes, I saw that. I saw that too. He was number one on Google searches during the debate.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
By name. So here's one exchange. The first, or this is the second one. First, Mike Pence got into it with him, and I think you can see the irritation of the other people on stage, and you'll see this when in a couple of these clips. The other candidates, they do not like Vivek, I don't think. So here he is getting into it with Christie.
I've had enough already tonight of a guy who sounds like ChatGPT standing up here. The last person in one of these debates, Brett, who stood in the middle of the stage and said, "What's a skinny guy with an odd last name doing up here?" was Barack Obama, and I'm afraid we're dealing with the same type of amateur standing on stage tonight.
Come on, give me a hug. Give me a hug just like you did to Obama.
The same type of amateur.
And you'll help elect me just like you did to Obama, too. Give me that.
So, I mean, you can tell they just don't like the guy. And like Hogan said at the beginning, I think that they're all... They're all seeing Vivek Ramaswamy pop in their internal polling. And so when they had the opportunities, they went after him. So, you know, he's had some bad problematic answers. He's dealing with contradictions of himself. Yep. He has said some squirrely things. I think he's trying to please whatever audience he is in front of in any given moment. And it causes him to say some things that he has to spend a day or two handling, backtracking on, and, or, you know, clarifying, in some cases denying, not very convincingly, in my view, denying things. But I think he emerged as the story of this debate. And it's a chance for him to introduce himself to a lot of people who really didn't know that much about him before. Kalen, what do you think?
So, you know, I think these primary debates are, we've kind of already talked about it a couple of times now. It's not necessarily about what positions you take, you know, and things like that, because, you know, ultimately everyone's very similar. And at the end of the day, what they've got going on, what I liked about him is kind of what I mentioned earlier. he is the candidate that we were promised that Ron would be. And I think he's attacking this with the most precision, with the most charisma, with the most authenticity. And I think that is what matters in a primary. People don't want the guy who would have won. Let me dial back even. If your argument is that your candidate is electable, is the most presidential and the most electable guy, you're losing. That guy will never win. It has nothing to do with that. In a way, Vivek was the least presidential. He was the most concise. He was the most articulate. He, you know, he speaks like a tech guy. He speaks like an entrepreneur. He's trying to jam as much stuff as he can into his answers. I mean, hell, the guy knocked it out of the park, in my opinion. It's a personality test. It's not, you're not like getting graded on, you know, your grammar on this, in my opinion.
I think he had, again, at the outset, I said he had just as many good moments as he had bad moments. I think the first question about, what was it, the economy or whatever it was, he kind of came out and at one point said, hey, guys, it's simple. It's not that hard. You got to drill. You got to frack. You got to burn coal. You got to destroy the administration. Like, I was like, yeah, people are listening to that going, yes. And then I thought there were times where he got a little too cute. He tried to get involved too much. He tried to mix it up too much. Now, they called him out, so he kind of had the right to do it, I think, and you want to defend yourself. Like the Chris Christie comeback after Christie, I thought that was a pretty solid burn, being a ChatGPT or whatever. But
yeah, that was comeback, a good line. Good line.
The comeback was good, which was, well, give me a hug like you did Obama. You got him elected, right? You're
I think everybody remembers how Chris Christie embraced Obama after the hurricane and helped Obama. Yes. Yeah,
Hurricane Sandy, and gave him a sloppy kiss there on the pier. And I think
a euphemism. You can't say that, knowing what we know about Obama now.
Oh, come on now.
Anyway, also off the top, he
presses
on that from Obama, skinny guy with
yes.
And then Christie called out Rubio for the talking points and the thing and copy. You know, and he kind of did the same thing with Vivek here, too. It was pretty clear. We've all said it, but Vivek was the surging candidate, and they wanted to stop him before he gained any more momentum. And I don't know that they did that. Nikki had a pretty good.
Yeah, you know, I have that. Let's
really good line.
Here you go. I think this is the clip you're talking about. So I don't think in this, if you watch this, he did have some bad answers. He had some really good answers. He also had some bad answers. Ramaswamy did. But I'm not sure that the bad answers really hurt him, because while they were bad answers, here in this clip you'll see, and we just watched, you'll see it again, Nikki Haley attacking him. And she's got righteous indignation. You can tell she really sort of resents him being there, I think. And so he's getting smacked down for what was a bad answer. But does it matter? Because it is just the very act of having other candidates attack him that's good for him.
Sure.
So the substance of the attack, to me, doesn't matter as much as the fact that the attack is happening. Here he is with Nikki Haley.
You've been pushing this lie all week, Nikki.
You want to go and defund Israel? You want to
let me address that. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm going to address each of those right now. This is the false lies of a professional politician. There you have it.
Your watch, so the reality is, America less safe. You have no foreign policy experience, and it shows.
And you know what? The foreign policy experience that you all have shows.
Yeah, so that was solid on Nikki Haley part. I think that was probably her best moment of the night. But to me, even though she's really smacking him down effectively, I still think on balance it helps him. Hogan, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it shows that he's the one people are trying to chase right now. And isn't it funny that a former vice president, former governor, you know, current senator, another former governor, or chasing Vivek Ramaswamy, a guy coming out of nowhere as an entrepreneur, and as Caitlin said, very concise, sharp, delivers a good line, a good message. Nikki had that line planned. That was obvious. And you know, it's interesting because since we're all in the game and we've done, you know, we've done these debate preps for a long time, you know, when they're setting someone up for a line, that was coming and she was going to get that line in sooner or later. But again, I think Vivek only, I wouldn't, he will be the most searched, as Kalen said, or is the most searched. And I think he may even get a bump out of this. I don't know how long it sustains because, as I said, that target gets real big on your back. And there are a lot of folks in there that have a vested interest in seeing him not succeed. But, I mean, he mixed it up with Pence. He mixed it up with Christie. He mixed it up with Nikki, Tim. So he was the guy they were going after, no question. I don't think it hurts him.
Mm-mm. Kalen, what do you think about that? That exchange where I think on substance she was right, but is the act of putting him in the crosshairs there again beneficial to him anyway?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's very beneficial to him is that there was a stark contrast between him and all the perceived insiders, right? And he did a really good job kind of bringing it back to, you know, these guys were bought and paid for, or you know, these career politicians were kind of like his two go-to lines. I think he said, used those both a few times. I mean, look, in the substance, like, you know, I'm wholly unimpressed by Nikki Haley. She strikes me more as a speech giver, not a policy developer or anything like that.
Yeah,
it's kind of her bag now. But I think it's all good for Vivek. I mean, like, when you're a guy who's running from scratch, all of it's good, man. I mean, like, that guy, if you'd asked me 2 months ago if he'd be in the position he's in, I would have told you you're crazy. And so he's ridden the most important quality you can have, especially in a GOP primary. And this is something I think the old guard has already forgotten, and they think that we can go back to doing, is you got to be the anti-establishment guy. I mean, that's it. That's what it's always been. Ted Cruz ran on it in 15-16. All those guys ran on it in 2015-16. But if you're not that guy, you're not going anywhere. That's why Trump won. And I think this only furthered that point.
And then the last clip that
I didn't real quick. I didn't like the bought and paid for line he kept using. The pack puppet or whatever was a good line, a good little nickname, a good rip. But the career politicians is fine. I thought bought and paid for, I don't know, that didn't apply to everybody. It didn't seem, and it opened up a can of worms for people to go after him, because Brett Baer then started using that in everybody's questions, saying, Tim Scott, are you bought and paid for, or, you know, mm-hmm. bought and paid for it. I didn't like that one, but that's a nitpick. I mean, you know, still.
Well, he was given an opportunity. Kalen, you just mentioned about how, you know, for the base and for in the scope of this GOP primary, you want to attack the establishment and demonstrate that you're not of the establishment. Right.
Yeah.
And he was given a perfect opportunity to do that when they were talking about the indictments of President Trump and the prosecution in four different jurisdictions, were federal and a couple of state jurisdictions. And so this exchange with Chris Christie really presents to me what the biggest problem for any of the anyone running for president who is not named Trump, because the overriding issue of the entire primary is Donald Trump. The whole thing is a referendum on him, and what do Republicans view about him, and do they give him another chance at regaining the office that he held once already? And here you have Chris Christie, who is one of the two guys on stage who's made it clear, that he and Hutchinson, that attacking Trump is the way he's going to go. But that's not where the base of the party is, and Vivek nails it, I think, in this one.
I'd like to get in and respond. Let's just speak the truth, okay? President Trump, I believe, was the best president of the 21st century. It's a fact. And Chris Christie, honest to God, your claim that Donald Trump is motivated by vengeance and grievance would be a lot more credible if your entire campaign were not based on vengeance and grievance against one man. And if people at home want to see a bunch of people blindly bashing Donald Trump without an iota of vision for this country, they could just change the channel to MSNBC right now. But I'm not running for president of MSNBC. I am running for president of the United States. We're skating on thin ice, and we cannot set a precedent where the party in power uses police force to indict its political opponents. It is wrong. We have to end the weaponization of justice in this country.
That's where the base of the Republican Party is. Really, and he brings it home, and there's Christie is left standing on an island.
He just says,
yeah. You're like, I mean,
it almost looked like he was agreeing. It's like, yeah, I hear you.
Right? So that's a great way.
He was acknowledging the line, but he was kind of, it made it look like he was going, yeah, that's why I'm here. Grievance.
Well, I think maybe it was an acknowledgement of like, yeah, this is what I'm up against. I actually have no shot. It finally kicked in. But that's where the party is at. And that's the problem for everyone on the stage. And the reason why they're chasing Trump. It's because the party is irate and livid and will never, ever, ever forget the fact that Joe Biden's Justice Department and some state jurisdictions are prosecuting the guy who's leading this Republican primary and would be Joe Biden's opponent. That's where the party is. And, you know, Vivek, to me, the only way you can really tell that he's not endorsing Trump for president is that he's there on stage claiming to be a candidate himself, because he's got both feet in the Trump lane. It's practically an endorsement every time he talks about the guy. So, I mean, again, to me, for a variety of reasons, Trump comes out on top in this debate, even though he wasn't there. Hogan, what are your thoughts on that whole exchange?
No, I you know, the one I said I really liked for him was, you got to drill, you got to frack. That was another one that was just a real slap, because after everyone was going after him, he just kind of stands up and punches back really hard. And look, I think the base wants to see a fighter, but they want to see a fighter who's fighting for the right things and the right causes too, the conservative causes. And I just keep going back to what that word Kalen used describing his answers, concise. He has a way of articulating his vision, his message in a cadence, in a rhythm that people get. It's simple sentences, subject verb agreement. It's quick and it's fast paced. Don't get me wrong, but it's really, really strong. And I know people are going to laugh and say subject verb agreement. You ought to be able to do that if you're speaking, but I'm just saying, I had a book in college when I was doing a media, and it was for TV writing, called Shorter, Sharper, Stronger. It was my favorite book, 'cause it was about TV writing and how you need to do. Listening to him talk, it's like reading that book. He gives a masterclass of just giving a good sentence, a good punch, a good message. But in addition, when you put him with like a Ben Shapiro on Daily Wire, they speak, you have to go look up philosophy from like,
yeah, it's a little,
but he has the ability to do both. I think that is a really, really valuable asset that Vivek has.
Kalen, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes to show. I keep coming back to, he's doing what everyone wanted to see. He's you know, giving the crowd what they want, and I think that's the most important part of something like this, especially for an outsider, upstart, you know, campaign. He's brought different energy to the race, the way that he's basically turned his fundraising operation into an MLM, multi-level marketing, strategy. Very interesting. He's doing really interesting things. It's so out of the box, so refreshing in a way that reminds me of what we saw, I don't know, 7-8 years ago. And that it's speaking to the core of the issue without getting muddled in the nonsense. And he doesn't really give a shit what like people before him thought. And I kind of love that. And that's what that answer was.
I think when you read the coverage of this, when they talk about that Haley exchange with Ramaswamy, the reporters will love it. And they'll talk about how she owned him and she put him in his place. And she revealed that he had no underpinning to his foreign policy opinions and all this other stuff. And the reporters will say 100% she won that exchange, and they'll be right. They'll be right. But how does that appeal? How does that whole exchange, how does his entire debate performance appeal to the Republican electorate? And I think that he comes out looking like a champ. Whether or not she schooled him on that point, he still looks like a guy who went out there, threw punches, took a lot of punches, and punched back. And like Kaylin's saying, that's what we thought that Ron DeSantis was supposed to be, but Vivek showed it today. Whether he was getting his clock cleaned or not, he still looked pretty – he comes out good doing it. It worked out for him.
Like, he's the only one, Tim, who's figured out – like, you look at kind of the value prop on all these guys, right? Like, Doug Burgum is the janitor who walked up on stage, and Hutchinson is, somebody's nephew. But, like, let's, like, look through the value prop at all of them, right? Ron's value prop from the beginning was that he was Trump without the baggage, I believe, was kind of like their initial tranche. And he hasn't figured it out. You look at, Christie's value prop is, for libs running around as Republicans. Tim Scott, I keep forgetting, was there. It's really unfortunate because he's a good man and he's good at this. But, like, homie's got to drink a Red Bull before he goes up there. Nikki Haley has got, a bunch of speeches under her belt. But no one has really figured out how to run in the Trump lane without being Trump, unlike Vivek. And I think that's really what we saw here. That's not going to be the takeaway a lot of people take from this. But he's figured it out. He's not saying I'm Trump without the drama. He's just doing it.
You just said something though that it kind of dawned on me. He's seeing this rise. And this spike in the polling right now, which again is why everyone's attacking him, as we've said, but because he is that, he seems to be running in that, embracing Trump and kind of being like Trump in a lot of ways. That's also a reason he's spiking, which mm-hmm. tells me the electorate is still looking for someone Trumpy. You know what I mean? They're trying to spin things, everybody else, and they're gravitating to this 30 some odd year old entrepreneur because he sounds Trumpy. I guess that's obvious to a lot of people. I just kind of dawned on me. I was like, he's been mixing up. He's been out there with the tennis and the horrible forehand, by the way. But he's doing all this stuff in these videos and mix it up with different press people at negative networks. And that's part of it. But it's his message and what he's saying, and it's a lot of Trump stuff. So it's an obvious correlation that voters would make and go, yeah, I'm going to look at this guy too. I don't know.
Right. And when he's doing that though, he's not cutting into Donald Trump's numbers. He's cutting into DeSantis. Yes.
Yeah.
And, I think he's going to start taking from some of the other ones too, who are out there. Like, Tim Scott is a guy who is probably catching a lot of votes that would have gone to Donald Trump, but some of those people are soured on some of the stuff around him, so they like Tim Scott. Now Vivek Ramaswamy comes along and maybe peels off a number or two from Tim Scott. I mean, it's amazing to watch the growth of this guy. Kaylin and I saw him speak at a Daily Caller dinner, I don't know when, 2 years ago, and who knew he was going to run for president? Yeah, I was, actually. That's
thanks
a true
for my
story.
Invite, guys.
And Ron DeSantis was there, as a matter of fact, that evening. Yeah, he was. So let's go through these real quick and then we'll wrap up because this is running pretty long. Yeah. Just real quick, capsule. We've touched on most everybody on this list, but let's go through all eight of them real quick and just give me a word or two on how you think that they did. Ron DeSantis, as I said, I think started out well, disappeared for a while, and then had a couple of problematic answers where he refused to answer. That's my judgment of him. Not a disaster, but not the home run that he needed. Kaylin, Ron DeSantis.
Yeah, I mean, I think where I would look next is kind of what the chatter in the donor class looks like on this. I think a lot of them are going to be disappointed. He's got some big names there that aren't afraid to talk to the press. But then also, if that it ends up being the case, the Ron consulting class as well are very prone to throwing others, under the bus for this performance. So, we could get into some of the pre-debate TV hits we should talk about offline, but, they're out there joking about the number of reboots they're going to have by the end of this campaign. Honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if they hit reboot again, sometime late next week.
I would say DeSantis got on base a couple times. We are the Line and Drive podcast.
Good one.
Got on base a couple times, but he never really got home. He had the opportunities. He couldn't make it around the bases.
Dylan in high school.
I will say, solid. I will say, I will be interested to see what happens after the story, the process stories that come out, the palace intrigue stories about were his people upset? Did they go, oh, wait, this was amazing? I'm going to be interested to see what the donor class thought of it.
Yeah, he had enough high points. I think they can cling to that. And probably. As they paint their narrative of it. Ramaswamy, we've covered in depth. I thought he was very strong, and even his missteps didn't hurt him because it made him the center of attention. Hogan, what do you think?
I agree. Like I said, he had some really strong points. He had a few whiffs, but I think overall for his first debate, probably not even knowing he would be the target of so many attacks, I thought he deflected, defended pretty well, and counterpunched pretty well too.
Kalen.
Yeah, homie reminds me of a really solid boxer. He just craves getting hit. I was just a part of a town hall with him maybe 3 weeks ago, early August. And I asked him, anything you don't want to get asked out there, anything you're nervous about? And he said, nah, dude, bring it, which I just thought was really great. He's out there. He craves the contact. Like a good boxer, great football player, like a defensive lineman, messed up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Here's a tweet that I'm reading now from a NBC correspondent. That obviously it wasn't Donald Trump who was attacked the most times in the debate, and it was not Ron DeSantis either. It was Vivek Ramaswamy, as we've been talking about. He got attacked 11 different times while he was standing on stage. How many times Ron DeSantis got attacked? Twice.
Are you saying Ron DeSantis or Ronda Santos?
Ron DeSantis. Okay, let's keep moving through the list. There are eight of these people. We have to keep going.
I'm ready.
Yeah, okay. Tim Scott, I think, missed his opportunity. He's a guy who's got a lot of money, which gives him the flexibility to be patient and wait for his spot. That is not what you do in a debate. You don't wait for the spot to come to you. You have to go in there and create your spot, and he didn't do it. He didn't do it.
Yeah.
Hogan.
No, he's my senator. I'm from South Carolina. I love the guy. But he had a chance to kind of break through and give some people something to hang on to. I don't think he gave them too much. I mean, there are some flashes here and there. But, he sounds like a senator. And I don't know that people want that right now.
Yeah, he started talking too many numbers, too many statistics.
Too many numbers, too many stats. And he's got such a great story of Cotton to Congress and a single generation. It's a great uplifting line. But yeah, I think he missed some opportunities.
Yeah, Kalen.
Yeah, a little too pre-canned. Almost struck me as a little nervous. This is a guy, that we've been talking about being quote unquote deep GOP bench for quite a bit now. So I'm just a little disappointed personally in kind of not how unprepared he was, but unprepared for the moment he seemed to be. And like Hogan said, this is a guy I like a lot. I think he's running the right race for him. He's picking and choosing. He's not attacking Trump, notably. And it's a little disappointing, man. I like him a lot. I want him to do better. Come on, buddy.
Yeah, he needed to mix it up a little bit more, I thought. Nikki Haley, I thought, she was there. She was apparent. You knew she was participating. I'm not sure that where she's at is where the party is at. She did a good job handling Vivek, I think, which I think still helped him. So she did well for the kind of candidate that she is and where she is on the ideological spectrum, but I don't think it helps her in this GOP primary.
Like Tim Scott was my senator and Nikki Haley was my governor. I think she is, she's been off the circuit for a while. She likes a lot of canned lines and she uses them repeatedly. I think we saw some of those. She was waiting for that Margaret Thatcher moment. That's something she probably had baked in the cake.
Yeah.
She's fine. I think a lot of people like her because she's unique in a lot of ways because of her background, because of her accomplishments as governor, serving in the Trump administration, of course. But I don't see her going too much further.
Kalen, any thoughts on Nikki Haley?
Did you know that Nikki Haley was a woman?
I knew you were going to say that.
I've so heard that, yes.
Because she only brought it up 10 times. It is sad that we live in a world in which a woman feels the need to outwardly identify and project that, that really speaks to
you. You couldn't tell really, because she was the only person on stage not wearing a navy blue suit with a red tie.
That's true.
Seven of them, seven navy blue suits and red ties. That. Seven.
My favorite was, no, Vivek and Pence were wearing almost the same thing. I think I tweeted, like, it's really weird to watch them fight. I like, are they like the same person? It's like I'm seeing double.
Oh, I know. It's like they were, the whole thing was like a brawl inside of Brooks Brothers. It's funny.
Well, if it's Pence, it's a Joe Banks. He's very proud of that.
That's true. Okay. That's true.
I mean, I shop at Brooks Brothers. I like
Brooks. I'm sure you do.
Anyway, I do. Mike, speaking of Mike Pence, I thought Mike Pence showed a little fire, a little gumption, and you know, he was the first one to try to take it to Vivek. And I think, like Hogan, I think pointed out, he tried to force everyone else on stage to say thumbs up or thumbs down on what he did on January 6, 2021. You know, I just don't think it makes a dent. He did fine for what he set out to do, but I just don't. I don't see how he advanced anything.
He's running because he thinks he can say to donors and everybody else he's the adult in the room in all aspects. And I like Mike Pence. I worked with him closely in the White House on a lot of things. I just feel like when he begins to speak, it becomes it's too rehearsed. And I think people kind of see that. And I don't think he showed some spunk and some fight tonight. No question about it. He has a good record, you know, with his time in Congress as a governor and also in the White House as the vice president. But I just don't see a path for him.
Yeah, I have a high respect and high opinion of Mike Pence. I've always liked him. I thought
Me
we
too.
Had a good relationship with him. You know, his exchange with Vivek Ramaswamy was kind of the, I think, kind of encapsulates what you're saying. It's here you have the guy who is in the role of this, in the mode of a statesman, and then you got this high tech, fast talking entrepreneur, and it's just really a big contrast between those two. Well, Kalen, Mike Pence.
Yeah, what I would say about that is, you know, I think he probably, I'm going to say this is a bold take. So buckle up. I think he did more damage to his candidacy tonight than anyone else up on that stage, ignoring the guys who wandered up there. And what I'll say about that is we just spent a considerable amount of time talking about how Vivek is climbing because he's a fighter. And when Pence went into, you know, angry Pence mode, I wasn't convinced. I wasn't scared. I didn't think he meant it. It's like he is like the I'm going to write you a real stern letter kind of guy. And that's not what people want.
But hey, the most anger he had was about Ukraine, not the border. Yeah. Not a border. It was Ukraine. And again, I don't think that's where the party is.
No, it's not where the party is. That's for sure.
Mark, write it down. I think he did more damage to his candidacy tonight than anyone else on that stage for that exact reason.
That is a hot take. All right. I can see that. I can see it. Chris Christie, he went out there and I guess did what he set out to do. He leveled some shots at Trump. He decided he was going to take on Vivek Ramaswamy. I'm not sure he got the better of that exchange. That was kind of a toss up, if you ask me. The first one anyway, the second one where he led Vivek into being able to take the shot about unfair and unjust prosecution of a political opponent was, you know, he gave Vivek a gimme. He was entertaining, and I think the people who were wanting to see him do his thing were pleased because he did his thing. He still doesn't budge. There's nowhere for him to go in this primary. There just isn't. There never was.
He doesn't budge or doesn't fudge.
Is that a fat joke?
Yes. Astute and adept politician, a good debater. He had some moments. Sadly, in his best moments, he was getting booed off the stage by the crowd because what he designed to do from the outset was go after Trump. And he's the candidate who gets up on stage, like two of the others that you'll bring up in a moment, who basically say, boo me all you want. I'm the one that's going to tell you the truth. that's never a good place to be for a candidate. You want them cheering you for what you're saying, not chastising them for not listening or hearing or understanding the point you're trying to make.
Yeah. I mean, you'll get some attaboys while you're in the MSNBC green room for what he did on stage, but it's not going to win you very many votes in a Republican primary setting.
Agreed.
So then the last remaining two, if you will, Chris Christie Light, Asa Hutchinson.
Chris Christie Light?
Yes. Did you see what I did there?
L-I-G-H-T?
You know what I mean. So he's kind of in the anti-Trump lane as well, in there with Chris Christie. And, I'm amazed that there were polls that showed him at 1%. I thought that was one of the criteria there.
Yeah, let me go off on Ada Hutchinson real quick, okay?
Why Ada? Trump was asked, I think Tucker asked him, why do you call him
Ada? I don't know.
He basically said
you can tell him, but he don't want to get in trouble.
I can't tell you.
Let me go off on Asa Hutchinson. I don't like Asa Hutchinson for very personal reasons. You want me to get into it?
Go ahead.
His campaign manager is this fella we hired off the street in 2015 because we needed someone to monitor the war room, who left after the Access Hollywood tape. He may have been one of the only employees to leave after the release of the tape. He then proceeded to lie in his resume that he worked in the Trump administration and on the Trump campaigns in 2020, and now runs Asa Hutchinson's campaign.
Wow.
This guy is the biggest loser. There are very few people, like I talk a lot of shit, there are very few people that I will go out of my way to talk, junk about. This guy's one of them. He stinks. The candidate stinks. He's got no business being there. Like, it is just offensive to me that our party put that man on the stage tonight to do whatever the hell that was. That was like not even, he didn't even do himself justice. I don't like him. I'm wildly offended by his presence on the debate stage, by his performance. I thought it was lackluster and is embarrassing. He should be embarrassed. He should go home and cry.
Yikes. You've been saving that one up. Wow. That's why you wanted to go through one by one.
I'm from Arkansas. He's not as well thought of as he thinks he is. And, I don't know where he goes from here either. I don't know how anyone like that catches fire. I don't know how they build momentum. They can't start a movement. And, again, his most notable moments was when he was getting booed. So, no.
Yeah. And then the last one, Doug Burgum, who got on the debate stage by
Doug Dark Horse Burgum, I'm calling him from now on.
Yeah, well, he's a dark horse, all right. He got on the stage by giving out $20 gift cards for a $1 donation. So you got 20 times return on your $1 investment in his campaign. That's how he got there. And, he's fine. Seems like a nice guy. I had a hard time paying attention to what he was saying because it didn't matter. It didn't matter. That was my view.
I wanted so badly to have a 20 right here and be like, yeah, I know. I got my dollar. I gave my dollar.
That's the guy. That's the guy.
Again, he's a nice guy and he's right. China's the biggest threat. I was trying to think of somebody in previous debates that he just kind of paralleled, but it's that person over there who understands an issue really well or is a nice guy and a good governor or whatever. But he doesn't have something I think voters are looking for. That's his big problem.
He reminds me of Eugene Levy. You know the comedian, actor, Levy?
From Schitt's Creek.
Yes, that's correct. From Schitt's Creek.
American Pie.
He was in a lot of those mockumentaries. Yeah. Waiting for Guffman. Waiting for Guffman was a fantastic one.
The Holiday.
Ah, see, there you go. The guy's been around. Was not on the debate stage tonight, however. That was Doug Burgum. What? Eugene Levy was not on the debate stage.
He looks like a broke Iron Man, like a broke Tony Stark. Isn't he a tech guy?
Yeah, he's not broke. He's far from broke.
Yeah, I must say that's one thing.
Like, no, he's broke in other ways. That's what I'm trying to say.
Broke politically.
Anyway. Any thoughts on Governor Burgum, Kalen?
No. What are we doing? What's that
guy? He don't care.
Guys,
all right. So, all right. So, let's wrap it up. Any right. Final thoughts? Does anything in the trajectory of this race change after tonight?
No.
Anything? Nothing.
No.
No, I'm not even going to beat around the bush. That big nothing burger. I would be surprised. Let me ask you guys a question. Anyone going to see any movement, any bump, and anything, given what we know is going to happen tomorrow?
Let's do this. I'm scratching your question. Here's my question.
Oh,
the next debate's in a month. Who of these people are going to be on that stage?
Yeah, that's what Kalen wanted to talk about initially.
That's cool, man. That's my question.
All right, hold on. DeSantis will still be there.
Large
part, this is a question of about money, basically.
Right.
Can your campaign survive and still pay the bills?
Yeah.
Ramaswamy, Tim Scott, possibly. He's sitting on a pretty good pile of money. I don't know that anybody else can do, but Doug Burgum can self-fund.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So can I ask a dumb question? Because I haven't done a lot of research into this. Are the criteria still the same? Or like, if you qualify for round one, do you qualify for round two?
No, they're increased. No. You have to get 50,000 donors now. Instead of 40. And they may change the polling requirements. Hogan, do you know?
I think it's like 3. What was it for this one? 3?
1%.
1. I think the next one's 3, I think. I may be wrong.
Yeah, I thought there was a polling requirement.
If they drop out. If they fall off, look for like a Larry Elder or somebody to go come flying in there, you know, too.
You think?
I mean, it could.
So yeah. To Hogan's question, who survives to the next one? Who can make it through another month and make it back on stage again?
Yeah, actually, I want to talk about the point Hogan just made about the people that didn't make the debate stage today. You're looking at Heard, you're looking at Suarez, who I believe he's a friend of the pod, right, Tim?
Yeah, he was a guest on the pod. Yep, he was the first candidate we had on.
So you're looking at Heard, Suarez, and Elder, I think, are the ones that didn't make it.
Suarez said that he had a case that his poll he got axed because his polling didn't come through. He didn't appear at 1% in certain polls that the RNC required. He believes that he did, and that he was.
Elder suing him.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with Hogan. I think we see a new face. I think because Burgum will drop, I personally think. Hutchinson will drop, I hope to God. and that'll free up a good, 2% for some rando to pick up.
But Elder's going to gain some support for that lawsuit, I think. People will like that.
So if it's 3% is a high bar.
Yeah, it's not going to be Heard.
No.
Loser.
But Elder did also say he had no plan B. This was plan A. He was honest. If I don't get on the base stage, it could be over for me. So who knows? But.
Yeah, but I think that's absolutely a possibility. I think, you see Burgum and Hutchinson drop out. I think Christie, I just don't understand what goes on. I struggle to understand the disconnect that goes on with someone's donating to someone like Chris Christie. I don't get it. I don't know what they're thinking when they go through and do this. I imagine it's mostly like Lincoln Project Republicans.
It's the Liz Cheney wing of the party. It's the Liz Cheney.
Yeah. I don't know how much longer that's going to fly. And then I think you've got, I think those are like kind of the only on the bubble guys. I think everyone's got the money to keep going as long as the polling improves on some of them. I just dropped the water bottle. We're killing it right now. I think that's, those are the ones that are going to drop out.
So here's the thing. The next debate will, this is according to reports, 3%. In two national polls, you have to achieve 3% in two national polls, or 3% in one national poll and two early state polls. 3%, I think, is, and then 50,000 donors instead of the 40,000 there was this time. I think 3% is a high bar to climb. I mean, that might weed out almost everybody right there.
Yeah,
just about.
I agree.
You know, and I do think you'll see Ramaswamy with a little bump, and I think it'll be certainly at DeSantis's expense.
Last question, because we're going way long here.
Yeah, way long.
Does Trump go to the next one?
I don't see anything that happened tonight that leads me to believe that he made the wrong decision by skipping this one.
I agree.
I will say this. We know him. There is an opportunity for him to get real pissed about an issue and for him to just want to beat the crap out of something. And I think if enough of them drop out, I don't think he's going to do it. But I do think that if enough of them drop out and it's maybe just like Vivek and or Ron or something, and he's feeling angry that day, he could just show up. I mean,
yeah, he could. I mean,
how he is, man.
You're right. And he always leaves like the little back door in the back of his brain open for the possibility to change his mind at the very last second, you know.
As he likes to see, and as we would always say, we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. Yeah, true enough. So we will see what happens, but I don't know. I don't think he came away unscathed. He's going to remain the far and away front runner. Really? You'd have to have a real compelling reason, in my view, to advise him to change and show up for the second one. Good talk, guys. That was a long one. I hope we had some people who stuck with it all the way through. Kalen Dorr, Hogan Gidley, I appreciate your time. Thanks very much for staying up late. Maybe we'll be among the first ones to get our analysis out, because this,
of course,
yep, this has
I love
been
staying up late with you, Tim.
I don't even know, Hogan.
Just
when he's
let it go.
All right. All right. Thanks, guys. This has been the Line Drive Podcast.